I've got the subject of tonight's first interview, and later it'll be this week's Hump Prize in my hands right now. I'll put it down on the desk, but there actually isn't room. It's quite a solid dome, but that's all right. It's about a key part of our national game, rugby, and it's called Facing the Haka, the history of one of the best known. Well, actually, what do you call the haka? Is it a dance, a chant, a challenge, a celebration of the life force? Whatever it is, there's not many things in sport like it. But more than that, the haka is a key part of what it is to live in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Jamie Wall and Andy Burt wrote it. Andy's with me right now. Kia ora, Andy.
Kia ora, Brian. Great to be here.
Well, congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's been a bit of a labour of love, so it's great to have it out there in the public now. It's on bookshelves, so just glad to have it out there.
Now, whose idea was it, yours or Jamie?
Yeah, so actually the idea, I had an idea with a mate that we wanted to tell the stories of people that had faced the haka, because so often you think, when you think of haka, you think of the people performing it.
Yeah.
And I had an idea that we tell the story from the perspective of people that face the haka. And we kind of parked that idea, and it actually happened last year. The All Blacks were playing South Africa in Wellington. 16-all draw. Now, I work for New Zealand Rugby and in a social media role there, so I was in a press conference, waiting for the press conference to begin, and I happened to be sitting next to Jamie Wall, and I knew he had written some books. He's an award-winning author.
Yeah.
And so I kind of pitched the idea to him of this idea for a book. And now Jamie, well, actually, I must thank Steve Hansen right now, because the All Blacks were delayed to this press conference. So in the 20 minutes they were delayed, Jamie got quite amped by this idea, and in that 20-minute period, we pretty much mapped out what you see in front of you right now.
Beautiful.
That whole book was
all because
out.
Steve Hansen, Buddha Hansen, was delayed slightly.
Yes, so thank you.
Do you know
Steve.
What delayed him? Any idea?
I'm not sure, but I'd like to shake his hand at some point in time and thank him for that. So thanks, Steve, if you're listening. But yeah, and that was really the origins of the book. And I think it's quite cool that this book had its origins actually deep in the All Blacks environment there, post an All Blacks test match. And that kind of, I guess, assisted us during that whole process of writing this book.
Te Rauparaha's great haka, Kamate.
Kamate, yeah.
How did the All Blacks end up adopting that?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, I mean, this book obviously tells the origins of the haka, I guess, and evolved over within the All Blacks context, evolved over a long period of time. Now, 1888, the natives tour to Great Britain, now the first team to adopt that haka, that was the haka they adopted, Te Rauparaha's haka. And to be honest, I can't tell you off the top of my head why they adopted that particular haka, but that was the one. That was 1888. And what this book does, it tells the whole evolution of the haka. There's a few key markers in time. 1888 is one. That's when the natives performed it. 1902. Now, my years may be out by one or two here, but hopefully they're generally about right. That was the originals tour. They also performed a haka. That was actually part of the kamate again, and that was really part of the attraction. You know, back then it was all about attractions. That was what got people to the game, and they actually performed kamate to the crowd. It wasn't actually to the opposition.
Yeah, now that's interesting, because there was a period. I remember Chris Laidlaw, former great All Black halfback and former
legend
announcer here at RNZ for many years, doing the Sunday program, talking about, and he was part of those great All Black sides of the mid and late 60s, that a lot of them didn't really know what they were doing when they were performing the haka.
Yeah, 100%. And that's where it's probably in that period it went through lulls and periods, right? But now it hit a point where, and Mike King, the comedian Mike King, he has a quote where he said, "The All Blacks haka before Buck Shelford and Hika Reed came on board, it was like white guys at a disco."
Yeah.
Right? It was follow the leader stuff. And it was in 1986. And when we talk about these key markers in time, 1986 is a really, really key point in time. It's when Hika Reed and Buck Shelford, they grew up in Rotorua, obviously immersed in Māori culture, kapa haka themselves. And they said, "We've got to turn this around right now. There's no point us continuing in
because
this vein."
There was a period when it wasn't being performed. We didn't issue the challenge. The All Blacks, in the 1972-73 tour, I think they didn't do it at all except for one game, if I remember, the Barbarians game, which we got thrashed in, by the way. But they didn't even do it to the team. They only performed to the crowd.
To the crowd. So it was almost, at some point in time, it was almost like a bit of a marketing, you know, marketing spin, right? But that was when, in 1986, that was when this has to be taken seriously now. So what they introduced to the team was the Māori concept of tikanga, which is a Māori way of doing things. And look, if the team buys into this, then we're going to do this properly. And now, leap forward 30 years, when you think of the haka, it's a key marker on the world stage for New Zealand. You ask someone around the world what they know about New Zealand, one of the first things they think of will be haka. You know, it might be Lord of the Rings. They'll still say Lord of the Rings. You know, it might be Stephen Adams, now Lord. But haka is right up there. It's a key marker. And if Buck Shelford and Hickory hadn't have come on board and transformed the haka into the fearsome challenge you see today, that may not be the case. Yeah. But it's really a shop window to New Zealand and Māori culture now.
The other thing about watching the All Blacks in the 21st century issuing that challenge is that they perform it. Okay, I'm not a specialist in kapa haka, so maybe I'm way out of my depth here. But just from observing and then comparing that with the kapa haka festival, it's at a standard of a reasonably good kapa haka group now. They're well drilled.
They've
been trained by people who know what they're doing, and I think they are expected to know what they're doing.
Yeah, well honed, and when they do it, it's done with meaning, done with passion, and it's at a certain level, right? And they don't want to drop from that level. It's like they play with precision, they play with power, they play with timing, and it's the same with the haka. It's that meaningful to them. It's a part of them playing.
Do you know, Andy, how much time they spend working?
So it's actually, this haka is obviously very sacred to the team. So that stuff, they don't answer many questions about the haka. And I work for New Zealand Rugby, so even things like I've been asked, hey, how do they know if they perform kapa or panga or kamiti? That's kept very sacred within the team. From what I understand, it's the day before the game. The players don't know themselves, and it's between the haka leader, at the moment it's TJ Petanara, the skipper, and then they kind of make that call, and then it's the day before the game they'll tell the team, this is what we're doing tomorrow. This is the haka we're doing. So it's those things that keep very sacred in the team.
Is TJ Petanara the current coach in terms of a leader?
I believe so.
Of the challenge?
Yeah. So when you talk about how often do they train and practice, I'm not privy to the inside working, but if you've been around the All Blacks environment, say for example, when they're in New Zealand, if you're in a hotel, you may hear it echoing out from a hotel conference room. If you go to the captain's run, you'll see them running through it the day before a game. So I think for a senior player, it's second nature. If you're new to the team, it's a pretty nerve-wracking thing to do for the first time. So you bring those players into the fold, and it's I think the old school. You look at the old school of if you're a player, you earn your stripes, right? Well, that's completely gone with rugby now. So if you're new, you're brought into the fold, and they'll teach you. You know, they'll make sure you're up to speed so that you can go out there, you can perform that haka with the performance it deserves each and every time.
And now it's not just kamiti, it's kapa or pango.
Kapa or pango.
The other one.
That's correct.
Do you know who composed that?
Derek Liddell. he was on the Queen's Birthday Honours list, actually, this year. So now, a little bit of a story behind that. So 2005, I guess the demographics of New Zealand had changed somewhat by 2005 from what it was back in 1888 when it was first performed. Tana Umanga, of course, was the captain, Samoan descent, many different cultures in the country at that point in time. So they wanted to create a haka, and it wasn't to replace kamiti, it was to give it a brother. It was never to replace it, it was to increase the family. So now you've got two brothers, right? Kamiti and kapa o pango. So what they wanted to do was have the, not necessarily the bind, but they wanted the influence from the rest of the team. So you had many different cultures there, and Pākehā being one, Samoan, Tongan, Fijian, all of those cultures have an influence and a say in how this haka was developed along with Derek Liddell. And that was the essence of it. So now we have two.
Who chose the photos?
The photos, well, that was myself and Jamie Wall. So that was a great job, actually. We spent many hours online, and there's amazing photographers over time who have taken some pretty special images. So
My favourite image is the performance of another haka, which I'm wondering if this is the Māori All Blacks.
Yes.
Te Timatanga. Stephen Pond took the photo.
Is that in Munster?
I think it's in Ireland, yes.
Yes, that's an incredible performance.
In the rain.
So that is one of the most incredible haka you could imagine.
Were you there?
I wasn't there. Incidentally, I was talking to someone earlier today who was there, Luke Crawford, who is the kamatoa of the Māori All Blacks. He almost had tears in his eyes today as he was explaining this story. So the Māori All Blacks rocked on up to Munster, Ireland. Now, Munster's coach, within a couple of weeks before the Māori All Blacks had arrived, had passed away unexpectedly. He was only 45 years of age. He'd played 200 games for Munster. At the end of his playing career, he went straight into being their coach. His whole life was Munster. When they turned up, there were effigies of him all over the city. So they turned up to perform this haka. They knew this was special. So before the kickoff, Ash Dixon, the captain of the Māori All Blacks, walked up to halfway, and he placed the Māori All Blacks jersey on the halfway line, and AF meaning Axel Foley. That was his nickname. And at that moment in time, Axel Foley's two children, aged 10 and 8, came out to the middle to receive that jersey from Ash Dixon before kickoff, and it was prior to the kickoff. Now, Ash walked back to perform the haka with tears in his eyes. And that performance, with the mist coming down, was absolutely incredible. And I don't think there's a dry house in the eye.
I know what you mean, and it's not just because of the rain.
Yeah,
It's the meeting point of music, as well as of sport, because that is that photo also catches a intensely passionate and powerful musical performance, because the haka is also music. And I guess when I've watched great haka, kapa haka groups performing as well, and it's sometimes like witnessing the human equivalent of an earthquake.
Yes,
And that almost pulling up the power of the earth up through the human, the person, out into the open.
And that's really what... So Luke Crawford, as I mentioned, Māori Oblique's Kamatoa, that's effectively what... He's heavily involved in the whole process behind writing this book. Now, a great thing he said to me in a quote was... not sure if we got this in the book, but he said, sometimes you perform the haka, but other times the haka performs you. The haka does you. Mm. And that's when you get taken to another level altogether, and it completely takes you over. So that's exactly what you're referring to right there. It's a whole other spiritual level that you get taken to.
But you've called this book Facing the Haka. So I need to ask you a little bit about some of the stories you tell about people who weren't playing for the All Blacks and who were lucky enough to face this challenge. One that comes straight to mind, because I do remember that he would bring his team right up, not right up under the noses, but not far away from the All Blacks, and they'd all be holding shoulders, and they'd stare at the All Blacks, face the challenge, John Eales. And he kind of learned, didn't he learn to respect the haka the hard way?
He did, most definitely. So there's a famous story in 1996, playing in Wellington. It was a horrendous day in midwinter.
Big southerly change,
A classic athletic park day. You know, if you're from Australia, I think he was from Brisbane, actually. He's from Queensland, so not ideal conditions for him. But anyway, he thought it would be a good idea, along with the rest of the Wallabies, to, instead of facing the haka, they turned their back on it.
They were probably trying to keep warm.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Were they doing drills?
They were doing drills in the in-goal instead of facing the haka, but that was a big mistake. They end up losing that game 43-6. At that point in time, it was the heaviest loss the Wallabies ever had. In fact, I think it is still the biggest in terms of losing margin they've had. They've conceded more points since then, but biggest losing margin. So they kind of learnt the hard way that day. And John Eales has since gone on a bit of an awakening journey, I guess you could call it. He's come to New Zealand, he's travelled around some of the, I guess, the hotbeds of Māori culture in this country, and come to learn more about haka and have that respect for it. So,
In fact, I remember a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
About him kind of learning, not facing up to haka, learning about it, coming over to New Zealand and learning about it.
That's right.
Didn't he go and get a lesson from Wayne Shelford?
Yes. Yeah. So it was, for him, it was a bit of an awakening process, that he realised, look, that probably wasn't the best thing to do, and all it's going to do is serve to fire up the All Blacks at that moment in time, right? So, yeah, so it's interesting how various teams have reacted to the haka over the over history, really.
Mind you, another Australian, David Campese, and I was actually at this game, although I didn't quite know what was going on at the time.
Yeah,
famously or infamously, kicking the ball around. The rest of the Australian team was facing up to the the rest of the team was facing up to the All Black challenge, and he's down the back of the corner of the field kicking a ball around to himself, and then he kicks when the All Blacks do the final leap. Yeah. He did this big kick over the top of their heads as if, wow. Stuff use kind of thing. And he did go on to have a rather good game that day.
I think he scored the winning try and Australia won, and they went on to win the World Cup that year. So, hey, he got away with it. But there's not many players that could do that. David Campese was probably on a level where he could get away with doing
it. Is that disrespectful? Would Wayne Shelford or Hickory'd?
It's interesting.
TJ Pelinara say that's disrespectful.
Yeah. So myself being Pākehā, it's hard for me to say what's disrespectful and what's not. In my discussions with Luke Crawford, the Kamatoa of the Māori All Blacks, he's told me, listen, because I spoke about, hey, All Blacks go to various parts in the world and they react differently. You know, you're in Japan, Argentina, you could hear a pin drop, no noise whatsoever, nothing. right? You go to Ireland and England, they'll be banging out a Swing Low Sweet Chariot or Fields of Anthony, right?
Yeah.
And what Luke Crawford says is there's no right or wrong way. There's no disrespect. It's you face it, haka, how you want to face it, haka. And there's no disrespect. So if you want to go kick a ball down, that's your choice. That's your way of responding to it, right? So I'm taking my lead from that.
Speaking of Ireland, I do remember the first time I saw a team marching towards and doing their own chant while the All Blacks were doing the haka.
Yeah.
Was, and I can't remember his name, but he was the captain of the Irish team in 89. And they went right. I think they were shouting, "You are not going to beat us. You're not going to beat us." And they went right up towards the All Blacks, less than a foot away.
They were face to face. And incredible scenes. And I think, so when we talk about 1986, 87, that was when the haka changed. And teams stood and admired it. But that was all, right? That was the first time a team stood up and challenged it.
And Wayne Shelford would have been leading that haka, wouldn't he?
Wayne Shelford was leading it, he was. And from what I understand, so the week before, an Ireland regional team or provincial team, whatever you want to call it, I can't remember who it was, Ulster or whoever it was, had been hammered by the All Blacks. And so this team, this was a test match. Ireland said, we're not going to be hammered again. And their captain led the way. And it was like a fork, actually. He kind of pulled the whole team forward, pulled them right forward, and he was standing in Buck Shelford's face. You know, and All Blacks won that day, but it was a very tight encounter, so it served to lift Ireland to that next level as well.
And what did Wayne Shelford say?
So post-game, so he was asked, was that disrespectful? Because no one had ever done that before. Post-game, Wayne Shelford, they obviously shared a handshake and a hug, and he said, no, that was completely on. That was his response. We're laying down a challenge, and that's Ireland's response to that challenge.
Another Irishman, Brian O'Driscoll, when he was captaining the Lions in New Zealand in 2005.
Yeah.
Now, if I remember rightly, he reached down, he picked up a leaf of grass from the turf at the end of the challenge.
Yeah.
What was he doing then?
So, from what I understand, he had actually engaged with someone multicultural. I'm not sure who, but in New Zealand he had actually spoken what's an ideal way, an appropriate way for us to respond to this haka, and he was actually instructed that would be an appropriate way to respond to the haka was to pick up the grass, and it's that almost like that you see, you know, the motion of handing over the leaf, or it was in that vein. So it certainly wasn't a disrespectful thing. It was actually come from a place where he had some thought about it. What is an appropriate way to respond in this first test match?
Yeah, he didn't last very long.
It didn't pan out too well for him as he was injured out of the tour within about 10 minutes of that game taking place. And I think that's still a bit of a sore chord for him all these years later.
You don't know whether to pick up a leaf of grass is disrespectful if it's a Samoan group doing the challenge.
Mm.
The reason I ask that is because the two people who took him out of that ruck were Samoa and New Zealanders.
Yeah, very true. Kevin Mealamu and Tana Umanga. Yeah,
that's right.
Yes,
the leaf of grass wasn't such a...
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know.
I'll tell you what.
If anybody knows, let us know. Yeah, I'll tell you what, sometimes wondered about
no
that.
No one's done it since. So
No.
Yeah.
Now, it was the famous Norm Hewitt was Māori All Black and New Zealand hooker, and... He had one or two pretty exciting, well, one in particular with an English hooker. And they were kind of nose to nose.
Richard Cockerell, yes.
Did you interview Cockerell for this book?
Well, actually, we didn't. The thing is with Richard Cockerell, it's all kind of been said. I don't think there's anything new he could have added to that. So it's all been documented. So we took that. There's a number of interviews that we could lend from for that. But I think what you had there was a perfect storm of just two characters that do not take a step back. Extremely combative. You've got Norm Hewitt, who'd been waiting for his opportunity to take that two jersey in the All Blacks. You had Richard Cockerell, who's an absolute upstart. I guess he's that cheeky, combative personality. Now you have both of them going head-to-head. Neither of them are going to take a step back. And that's what occurred then. And they were absolute face-to-face, nostril-to-nostril during that. And pretty incredible scenes.
Haka's not male only, is it?
No. No.
Black so ferns do it, don't they?
Yep. That's a great point. So this book is not just about the All Blacks, of course. That's, you know, a main feature of the book. But the Black Ferns Sevens, Olympic gold, silver medalists, I should say, current world champions. And the Black Ferns, five-time world champions, in fact. More World Cups than the All Blacks.
Yeah.
They both have their own haka that they perform, that they've developed in their team, that have their own traditions. And they both Well, for the Black Ferns, they perform it before a game. For the Black Ferns Sevens, they only perform it when they win a tournament. So it's only reserved for winning when they do that.
Outside of countries of Oceania, so Aotearoa, New Zealand and the Pacific Islands, are there any other nations that have any tradition of a chant or a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you call it your war dance, you know, of course it's the Pacific nations, right? Yes, Fiji have their sevi and the seva in Samoa, and of course Tonga have their own. But also, and it's uncovered in that book as well, South Africa at one point in time had an African, and sorry, I can't recall the name of it off the top of my head, but they also had a war dance they performed at one point in time, which is very interesting. And they brought it back, and it's featured in the book as well, where they had, I guess, a tribal group who performed this war dance after the haka, or perhaps before the haka, but they also have that history as well. So I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, the haka is very unique, but, you know, in terms of these challenges, these very tribal challenges, we do see it across the world.
What does it say about us as a nation, you think, that this the haka is such a unifying, I mean, not everybody likes it, of course, but it unifies a lot of New Zealanders, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, I think it's another number of aspects here, but I think pride is one. You know, as New Zealanders, it fills us with pride to see that performance each and every time, right? And, you know, as you alluded to, I think you hear people saying, oh, the haka's overdone, you know, but it's interesting. I don't believe so at all. For me, it is the absolute New Zealand, one of New Zealand's key markers on the world stage. It's a source of pride for us. You know, it's not just a challenge that you see performed at before a rugby game. If you've ever been to a funeral and you see a casket being taken out and you see a haka, that's chills.
Well, that's what I said about also it being an important expression of the life force.
Yeah.
It's not just a war dance.
It's not. That's right. And that's one point that Luke Crawford, Kamatoa, who led us through this, he was saying, listen, it's a challenge in that respect. It's not always a challenge. You know, it's got a much wider meaning than that as well. Yeah.
Andy, thank you very much for joining us. And good luck with the book.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
We'll be giving one of them away, this one actually, next hour.
Perfect. Fantastic.
But you can't take part, Andy, because you'll have an unfair advantage.
Definitely.
Andy Bird, he's along with Jamie Wall, co-author of Facing the Haka, The Challenge, The Emotion, The Inspiration. It's published by New Zealand Rugby.